Call the meeting to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone. I'm glad you chose to celebrate here with us tonight. Our first item of business is a public hearing on the Stillwater Legacy Trails. I now declare the public hearing open. Eric from Interstate Engineering will give us a report on the project.
Sounds good, thank you. As Webb said, my name is Eric Lear. I'm with Interstate Engineering. We've been asked by Stillwater Legacy Trails to submit a grant application for the MDT Transportation Alternatives grant funds for a continuation of the Stillwater Legacy Trails network that's been going on over the last several years. Anyone here for the hearing, and you don't have a copy of the presentation here, there should be a couple sets left over there, so feel free to grab those. Just a quick history here. Since 2008, Stillwater Legacy Trails have been putting in trails right now, and it's the latest being Highway 78 was the latest one that went in. So currently we're looking at an updated route that will be implemented from Pike Avenue all the way up to Heritage Park and just across Fort Avenue. So what this does, what MDT's alternatives provide is we're trying to check the boxes of several different aspects for a trail network throughout communities throughout Montana. Primarily safe routes to school, connectivity to the district throughout the city. What this will provide is connectivity to city parks, and it just enhances public safety throughout the community. So, as part of our application, we have to put together an estimate, an engineer's estimate for the project. What we're looking at right now, if this grant is awarded, we'll be provided $615,113 from MDT with Stillwater Legacy Trail providing the match that's required for the grant. As part of the application, we're also soliciting letters of support, which Jill has been collecting over the last couple weeks. And we've also got additional support if anyone is in favor of this project. So if that's the case, come see me and we can get a signature. And we'll be submitting the application on April 9th of this year. A little more about the project is that it'll be, like I said, from Pike Avenue on the east side of Corey Street. It'll likely be a 5-foot sidewalk, curb and gutter, connected to Heritage Park. And then from there, get a little more flexibility with how we get that routed through there, possibly more trail-like network through the park. And then that connects ultimately to the school from downtown. So, if there's any questions on the project, we have to answer them.
Are there any questions for Eric on the project? Is there any public comment that anyone would like to make? Any public comment? None appearing, I declare the public hearing closed. I'll call the meeting of the Columbus City Council to order. Council has before them the minutes of the March 3rd meeting. Are there any additions, deletions, or corrections?
minutes be approved as written.
I'll second.
Motion by Dannen to approve as written, seconded by Cole. Is there any discussion? Dennis?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
Cole?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Dannen?
Yes.
Motion passes. I'll entertain a motion for the approval of delinquent shutoffs.
I'll make that motion for approval of the first month, the second month delinquent shutoff.
Second.
Motion by Tim, second by Dennis. Is there any discussion? Dannen?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Cole?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
Dennis?
Yes.
Motion passes. Entertain a motion for the approval of claims.
I'll make a motion for the approval of claims.
Motion by Cole.
I'll second.
Second by Dannen. Is there any discussion? Dennis?
Yes.
Tim?
Yes.
Cole?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Dannen?
Yes.
Motion passes. There are no petitions or communications. We'll move on to officer reports. Chief Cogger?
In the interest of time, I have nothing further than what's on the report. Unless you have any questions.
Any questions for Rich? Chief Uecker?
Nothing further than what's in my report, Mayor.
Any questions for Aaron? Peyton didn't submit a report. He was at the water conference all week, but he's on the Zoom meeting if you have any questions for Peyton. Do you have anything to add, Peyton?
No, other than it was a good conference, there was a lot of good stuff there that we can implement some projects going forward. So all in all, I think it was a pretty good time well spent.
Good. City Attorney?
I don't have anything to add at this point.
Any questions for Ryan? City Clerk?
Nothing further than what was in my report.
Any questions for Cherie? Is there any public comment on current agenda items? You can lay down if you'd like. Please, but do give us your name.
I'm Bob Van Oosten. I'm here with the Conservation District, Stillwater Conservation District. I'm the chairman, and we recently had two supervisors that came up for a question whether they are actually legally appointed and appointed by you guys, accepted by us. There was confusion on that. I'm still not totally convinced, and we aren't either, but anyhow, as you go through the records, it appears Ben Walker was appointed and is still a member. And so the main issue tonight is, if you're okay with it, then we would have one more. We would like you to appoint, and that would be Nate. In the process before, when we didn't apparently get it done right, that was partly our fault, partly lack of communication. It was at the time of the flood, and our district meetings were lasting 5 hours. The workload was tremendous. Somehow we missed that. And in our minutes, it says we appointed it, which isn't true. We accept your appointment. So anyhow, we would like to see if you guys could appoint Nate for a term to end in December of 27. And in part of our confusion was the beginning and ending dates. But anyhow, in a nutshell, that's what we would like to do. I have a letter here recommending that before you, and my reasons why. I believe everybody has a copy. We, as a board, have been accused of a whole lot of things lately. Many of them not true. Probably only one of the accusations in anywhere that could be even close to. But nevertheless, I'm willing to answer questions if you want to ask me stuff at that point in time in your meeting when you discuss this. I'm fine with that. And I'm willing to address anything else.
This will be the only time when there will be comment from the public on any agenda items. So later on, there will, during the council deliberations, there will be no questions either from the public to the council or from the council to the public. But they can certainly ask questions now.
Okay.
This is the time for that.
You have questions?
So I thought it was our understanding that both of them were out of order.
I believe, do you go by Robert or Bob? You go by Bob or Robert?
Bob, please.
So Bob, my first letter to the district explained the city position. I don't believe that either positions are filled currently, and that I believe that they can since 23. They're supposed to be reappointed every 3 years, and they begin and end at the same time, the two urban supervisor positions. So basically every 3 years, both of these positions need to be appointed by the city council. So Mr. Walker was appointed in 2022 to fill the remainder of, I think it was Mr. Fink's term. And then that position ended in 23, towards the end, I think November. So when that term ended, he'd have to still be reappointed by the city council. And so the other position that Ms. Ballback originally had, or previously had then, was filled in December 23 by Mr. Jones. It's the same story. It's just one was treated as a reappointment, but the appointment authority is not with the district for those two positions by statute.
Right.
So it's what I've conveyed to my city council is that neither position is filled currently and hasn't been since the end of 23. So both positions need to be filled.
Okay. And I'm fine with that.
Okay.
If the board's, by virtue of council, I guess,
sure,
accepts that, then I would ask that you appoint the board.
Okay.
And all the issues of conflicts of interest then just go away when you do that.
No. And I've read your letter, and I'm a little confused. I think there's a slight confusion about what conflicts of interest mean. I think you're conflating procurement policy with conflicts of interest. So there may not be issues in the procurement policy for these projects, but Montana Code has standards of conduct and rules of ethics for all public officers and employees. And the big one is in my second letter to the district. That's why I asked the list of questions pertaining to both applicants, Mr. Walker and Mr. Jones, was that there's a statute in there inside of my letter that you cannot, basically public officers and employees cannot benefit from contracts in their official capacity. So if you sit on a board, city council, county commission, you sit on any sort of governing body or entity, and you are a board member and you receive awarded projects from that board, that's what that statute's intended to preclude that exact activity from happening. So I read your information about the procurement policy, and there may have been no issues with procurement given the emergency, but that has nothing to do with conflict of interest. That's having a financial interest or stake in the underlying bid that's being awarded by the governing body when you serve on it. Does that make sense?
Yes, we understand that.
Yeah. So I don't...
And going forward, we realize that can never happen.
Okay.
But we were in the middle of the DWP sure. project with a deadline. Complete deadline. I mean, it ends. So anyhow, things didn't get quite right on that. No time, like you said, as in procurement. Were there any violations? We saw two.
Okay.
So, anyhow, it's up to you guys then. Make the appointments. That's entirely on you. Any other questions?
So I don't quite understand. I'm kind of new at this, to this part. I've been reading. My understanding, these two men were on your board, and they received contracts for a substantial amount of money, but they weren't supposed to do that. Is that correct?
That's my interpretation of the statute, Bob. Yes, yes. You're not supposed to be able to, so there's a statute that I have attached with my report, and I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's 2-2-201. And it just says public officers and employees are not supposed to have any interest in contracts administered or granted on behalf of the board to which they serve. Okay? And so that's the issue, and the potential issue in a nutshell.
Where does the council sit in appointing board members? And if the council appoints somebody to a board, and the board doesn't proceed like they should, is the council liable for any of that? I mean,
I don't believe so. I don't believe so, Dennis. But I believe that. Basically, by statute, we don't have any supervisory authority over the conservation district. We strictly have appointment authority for these two positions because we happen to be located within the geographical boundary of the district. That's why, for whatever reason, the legislator said municipality should have an appointment authority in that circumstance. That's all we have. We don't have supervisory authority. We can't tell them how to operate. We can't tell them really how to operate on day-to-day function. However, I think the question that you're asking, and I think this is the part to it that kind of happens on a daily basis, is if you, in your opinion, believe that you're aware of a potential conflict of interest that has transpired or has occurred, how does that affect your decision moving forward? If you believe that's occurred and you don't believe that should have happened, you have an obligation to vet the information you have before you and make a decision whether or not you think it's a well-informed decision. It's up to you, but do you feel confident and comfortable making that appointment? That's only a question you folks can answer. I can't answer it for you.
Right.
So
yeah, I understand that. But
yeah.
And you gave us a whole bunch of new information tonight. We got another letter from somebody.
Right.
Tonight.
Yeah, two letters tonight.
Right. And I don't know that there's ever been any proof of any, I mean, maybe we'll see that later, based on your letter.
In the correspondence from the district, they've conceded, and I don't think it's disputed by anyone, that there were contracts awarded to two of their board members.
Yeah.
That's not in dispute.
Yeah. Can I say something?
You can't interrupt, but you can wait until whoever's done speaking speaks, and then you can say something.
So.
Okay. Are you done, Bob?
I think so.
Or would you want to yield?
I think so. I was going to give Ryan one.
Thank you.
This is just distribution of public comments.
Thank you. So, Bob, just as a final question, it looks to me like, according to your bar graph here, that 406 excavating and Blackbeard were two of the three highest contractors awarded. And those two men were on your board. Is that correct? I'm just reading that tonight, and then I'm looking at this. I'm having a hard time making a decision on something like this because, like Dennis, I'm really. Well, anyway, I'm not sure why we are making this decision. Not sure
the reasons why, I guess, you know, with all of the conflict that's going on between this group and this group, we seem to be in the middle of it somewhat. And there's nothing litigated, nothing that I've known that's gone through the court or been any judgment on that I'm aware of.
No.
No judgment.
I mean, there is potentially, something's coming.
We are being threatened with lots of investigations. A lot of it was complaints from just one point. And it's surprising what that can stir up. So anyhow, by law, you guys are supposed to appoint somebody, and we accept it. Have to accept by law. Anyway, that's my recommendation. Got anything else?
Thanks, Bob.
Sharon?
Yeah. Do I need to stand up or?
You need to stand up and state your name. And you can use the podium if you'd like.
Sharon Clemettis. So a couple of things that didn't get mentioned, and probably a lot of people don't know about, is that with the EWP program, the procurement process went through the conservation district's procurement laws. I had assistance from the attorney, the DNRC attorney. I have emails from her related to procurement, which I know is not part of the some of the accusations. But the fact of that we did address early on conflict of interest, because not only, you know, Ben and Nate were not even on the board at the time of the flood when EWP went into effect, but the fact of that we had two other board members that were awarded EWP. We had no control of it. So NRCS, they're the ones that chose who was awarded and how much was awarded. We had no control of this. So this got brought up from the very beginning. And at one point, they thought, well, you know, those two shouldn't get awarded. But they ended up continuing, and they awarded both the other two board members, not these two that we thought were board members later on. But so, I mean, there is no difference there of conflict of interest and being awarded.
Was there a bid on the Soil Conservation District's table at a meeting that had Nate Jones or Blackbeard or 406 that was voted on at the Stillwater Conservation District Board that those folks were part of?
At no time did any other board members other than the chairman, because that was how it was decided, because we had the other two board members, they couldn't vote on their own projects. So none of that stuff was available during the board meetings. This was done with the chairman and myself.
None of these?
Oh, none of those. Nothing. The only thing
none of these were voted on by the board.
No.
They didn't vote on them.
Right. So
the board didn't vote on their project.
Because it wasn't our decision. It was NRCS's decision.
So who determined the successful bidder?
So I collected all the data, and the chairman. So I collected and made sure that the winning bid, that contractor could do the project within the time frame, that they weren't pushing it out, which was happening, pushing it out a couple of years when we only had the short time period to get it done. So we had to go through this process. And then everything went through the chairman.
So there was no district board vote to ever approve any of these?
No. Because
so the two of you, did you do these at public meetings?
No, because it wasn't our decision on these, because it was NRCS. We collected the data. We said this is what it is, that this is what.
So you didn't make decisions on bids then? You sent them off to NRCS?
After we got it down to one person, and then we had a backup, and one time I think we did have to use a backup person, it still had to go through NRCS to be approved.
But you picked the person that it went to, that went to NRCS?
Yes.
Oh, so you did pick them.
But they had all the tabulation for each one. So like I said, we chose one, meaning the chairman, never went to the board. It was never in any of the board meetings. I would give an update to the board, but it was over the overall, because there's 51 projects between both EWP projects. 51 projects total. So I would give them a lump sum. This is how much we've spent. and everything would go to grants and agreements and to NRCS for them to approve or to say they can't do this. That happened quite a bit, where they, you know, that the contractor went above and beyond, and so we had to, we only got back so much money so that we could only pay that contractor that much money. There was times where there was change orders, and we didn't approve the change orders, NRCS did. So this is unique, and so, and this is not how the district usually works, because if we write grants, it's the engineers that go through the procurement, and they open the bids, they do everything, and then they write a recommendation to the board, and then that's how those grants happen. But EWP was totally different, and we did not want to do it at first. We asked the commissioners to do it, and both counties, and they didn't want to do it. So it was either us, or there was no money coming to either one of these counties. If we could do it again, we would not, because it's been a nightmare, and it was a lot of work.
How did Carbon County thing come up?
So,
I mean, how did you guys get involved in that even?
So prior to the flood, so Carbon Conservation District and Stillwater had always worked together. So we would do conservation days together, we would write grants together. Darlene and I would, you know, I would help her with tax time, go back and forth. She got sick, and the board asked me to, if I could step in. So she ended up passing away a little bit, I think a couple of weeks after the flood happened. She was in the hospital, she had both legs amputated, and she ended up passing away a few weeks after. So I went over there and I helped them with getting organized, with keeping it going until they could hire somebody. The flood happened, and then it was just me trying to do both districts. Prior to the flood, I was without writing grants. I was only part-time employee. Then I turned into almost two full-time jobs, trying to keep both districts going. We tried and tried to hire somebody. We could not get anybody hired. So they ended up, you know, so I ended up staying on to do the financials, and then I hired an assistant to keep the office open, because I couldn't be in two places at one time. So they were there to answer the phone, help people get the joint application ready, because we had at one point 172 for that first year, and then 196 for Stillwater. So I had volunteers helping in both offices, I had assistants in both offices, and we had board meetings that were going until midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, and we would have more than one board meeting in a month to try to get through all of this process, not only of the EWP, but also flood recovery, so people could get to save their houses or bridges or whatever. And the Carbon CD was not able to do any of the grants, because Darlene got scammed by somebody overseas on their SAMS account. So I was the one that actually got their SAMS back up and registered so that they could start, and they knew that we were going to, that anything else beyond the flood recovery, you know, once, you know, we had somebody there that could do it, it would be registered through their SAMS. But because I had already started the process, we were already in construction, or not construction, we were already in engineering, so we ended up keeping, and that was the board's decision that the forestry project would stay in Stillwater County, because we already paid through EWP for that beginning engineering, and then once the engineer decided that, okay, in order to help these landowners under EWP, we're going to have the forestry. So it took months and months, and the forestry came to me in February of 2004, anyways, in January. And then it took until September to actually, for them to write the good agreement, the good neighbor agreement. So they took, and this, how this all worked was that they took our EWP contracts and everything and molded it to make the forestry so that the project was going to be, the funding would just stop at EWP once we used up all the money, and then we would move into forestry because the project is actually on forestry land of what needs to be done up on the hill to protect the landowners down below.
Who put those two together? Who put the EWP and the Forest Service together? You said,
I would say the best would be the engineer.
You said he put them together?
It was decided upon at a board meeting, at the Carbon board meeting. So it never got put into the minutes, but it was on the agenda, and it was discussed there that because we were already doing the EWP, that we would just continue the funding. We would continue the project with just the different funding source. And for the accusation that I got that much money is not right. It's 100% a lie. So.
Okay, I'm sorry, on the old acronym, what is the NRCS? What's that stand for? NRCS, am I hearing that right? Or?
Yeah. So NRCS is our federal agency. So we got DNRC, NRCS, and then the Conservation District all in one building here in Columbus. And so it's National Resource Service.
Conservation Service.
So we work together, we are housed together in the federal building. So the best way to explain conservation, what we do is we're housed in federal building. I'm a federal employee, I have a federal ID. We enforce state law, but we are paid by mill levy.
Okay, all right, thanks.
Any other questions for Sharon? Okay. Any other comments?
Good evening, gentlemen. Ladies, Doug Harrington here. I think you might remember the last time I was at this meeting, and I applied for one of the conservation district openings, which there are technically legally three openings at this time. I'd like to make some clarifications to some of the statements that have been made this evening. Typically, I have my ducks in a row, and I'll start with the federal grants, all right? Any federal grant money, any of the money that goes to a conservation district in the state of Montana is public funds, period. It's a combination of county, state, and the majority is federal. With that said, the public has the right to full financial disclosure for every facet of their existence, everything. That means their payroll, their bid projects, their grant projects, etc. That's the law. Just to clarify that. With regards for procurement, there seems to be some confusion about procurement and conflict of interest. So I'm gonna make some clarity to that. And I welcome anybody to do a little research. I know you guys got a lot on your plate, and you're probably like, well, why do we got to deal with this? I need to clarify this. All right, so the way the law works with federal grant money, it clearly states you have to follow either your own procurement rules, which would be the CD, or the state procurement rules, or the federal procurement rules, whichever is the more stringent, which is the federal procurement rules. Because it's federal grant money, it's a federal award. So, with that said, there's a lot of CFRs, and there's a lot of 31 USC codes, but the basic one that covers conflict of interest, just to help you guys see where this is at, is it's the Federal Super Circular 200 series of laws. This is 200-318. The Montana DNRC, Department of Natural Resources, just sent a reminder out. I believe the clerk of courts here, Cherie, received a copy, and it went out to all the conservation districts as a reminder. because the DNRC administers ARPA projects, which are federal grants, federal money, which goes to the DNRC as an administrator, and then it goes to the Conservation District or the respective sponsors. With regards to EWP money, that goes through the USDA Division NRCS, and it goes to a sponsor, which in this case would be Stillwater CD. It was acting on behalf of Stillwater and Carbon Counties. So, with that said, the procurement and conflict of interest section, 200-318, conflict of interest. The recipient or subrecipient must maintain written standards of conduct covering conflicts of interest and governing the actions of its employees engaged in the selection, award, and administration of contracts. No employee, officer, or agent or board member with a real or apparent conflict of interest may participate in the selection, award, or administration of a contract supported by the federal award. A conflict of interest includes when the employee, officer, agent, or board member, or any member of their immediate family, their partner, or an organization that employs or is about to employ any of the parties indicated herein has a financial or other interest in or a tangible personal benefit from an entity considered for a contract, an employee, officer, agent, or board member, or board of monetary value from contractors. However, the recipient or subrecipient may set standards for situations where the financial interest is not substantial or a gift is an unsolicited item of nominal or minimal value. So, that clearly states conflict of interest. Now, with regards to how long this is going on and the time frame, the flood took place on June 13th of 2022. I was heavily involved. I was there on June 13th. I was there through the night of June 13th, the next 2 weeks, assisting MDT. I kept 212 from being blown out any further down Main Street. We saved the 308 bridge, MDT, going in down into Bear Creek. We did numerous projects for Carbon County, Red Lodge Floodplain Administration, had those 5-minute photo ops with Steve Dane shaking hands and on Fox News, the whole thing, so we had a little moment of fame like that and gone on the flip. But with that said, these projects carried on right till October of this past year. So when they're trying to imply that there was no time frame to properly administer this stuff, it's ridiculous. These projects were engineered. There was time for engineers, site visits, drawings, plans, etc. And the bid process is clearly blind in federal procurement strategy. There was more than ample time. What I would like to suggest to this board is to ask Sharon Flemettis and the chair how many millions that Dunwalker received out of these projects. I said millions with an M. Might want to ask that. And then you might want to ask how many subcontracts to the tune of $750,000 that one board member won the award and subcontracted it to the other board member. These are just things that I think my suggestion is that the board should be cognizant about. And furthermore, with the attempted character assassinations on myself in Bob's letter to the board, he stated that I was under investigation. This is ridiculous. I spent an hour on the phone today with Montana DEQ. I was talking to their enforcement division. And they said at no time was I ever involved or under any kind of investigation. I was an employee of KLE Construction and nothing more than an employee. I wasn't an officer, I wasn't an agent. I had no authority to enter into contractual agreements and so on. But furthermore, what I don't think that Mr. Venusen or Sharon Flemettis realizes that on October 31st, I had met earlier that day with some people up at the 400 Ranch, and we were doing permitted work on the 400 Ranch. And we're clearing debris and so forth from Rock Creek up to the U.S. Forest Service line. And there were a lot of residents that came forth that had severe damage to their homes. I mean, they were scouring right up to within 2 feet of their foundation. So they were scared for the property and what might happen to it. And I said, I can't do anything because you have to get the permits. The emergency situation was long over. It had ended in July. There was no longer any immediate threat to life, to property, or to livestock. So the normal permitting process had to take place. So with that said, these people wanted something done. I said I would inquire. So later that day, I went to the CD office here in Columbus, and I spoke to Sharon Flemetis. And I have an email here. It's time-stamped and dated. It can't be altered. It can't be fabricated or changed. And this email was to my supervisor, the owner of KLE Construction, the COO. Okay? And I said, Jason, I visited with Sharon with the Carbon / Civil Water Conservation, County Conservation District this morning at her office in Columbus. I was going to inquire about the potential of obtaining some 275 permits, as Terry, which was the guy from the 400 Ranch, was inquiring about the permits, had indicated at their last Thursday's meeting that they seemed to be more inclined to allow them. But instead, what I was told by Sharon was not something I expected. Sharon stated that KLE is in violation of the Natural Stream Bed and Land Preservation Act 310 law. She said that KLE has accrued $38,400 to date in fines and is still being fined at a rate of $500 a day. She went on to tell me that is also punishable as a misdemeanor under Montana Annotated Code. Excuse me. With that, it was also stated that their office had sent multiple notices of non-compliance by email and certified mail to KLE office. Further, any work that is permitted combined with an application for funding by the state / feds cannot be performed by KLE because we are in current violation, according to Sharon. It was also stated that it has been turned over to a state attorney with the DNRC in Helena. So, I said, so obviously, not what I was expecting to hear, as I knew nothing about this situation. Keeping in mind, this is in October of 22, right? Long before today's date. So, I do not want to be personally implicated with these violations. Please advise. Thank you, Doug Harrington. Okay, so, I don't know whatever came of this, but I did do some follow-up on $38,000.
Doug, how much longer do you plan on going?
I've got one more page. Everybody else has had adequate time to speak, sir. So I'd like to just convey where I come from.
The question was, how much longer do you plan on going?
A few more minutes.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you, sir. So the DNRC did not pursue these fines because Sharon never provided the actual documentation that the DNRC Enforcement Division, I found this out today, needed to continue with them, so it was a moot point and it was dropped. So 3 days later, after October 31st, because I take it seriously what Sharon had said about these permits and the infractions that KLE was participating in, unbeknownst to me, I wrote another letter to Jason Everett. I said, Jason, I'm providing KLE with my notice of resignation as of today, November 3rd, 2022. I cannot continue to jeopardize my reputation or expose myself to potential legal implications due to some of the practices that KLE engages in. The latest of which was discovering on accident that KLE never procured the necessary permits required by law to perform stream bank restoration and protection. You were supposed to be handling the permitting side just like you had indicated in the contracts with the individual landowners that you secured. This past Monday, October 31st, I was informed for the last 2 months, KLE has been notified of these violations and even sent 2 certified letters to this effect. I was never informed of this, so I was kept in the dark. I made you aware of my findings regarding the permitting violations in the Carver County Conservation District and the Stillwater County Conservation District, Red Lodge Floodplain Administrator, and other agencies by email on October 31st, 2022. In that email, I stated I could no longer engage in these activities due to the current lack of permits and violations issued. I ask you to please advise regarding the situation, and you, to this day, you chose and have elected to not respond to me. Therefore, I'm resigning as of immediately. So I just want to make that clear. You folks, you gentlemen, are welcome to look at these emails to see where the timestamps are dated, because I addressed the situation immediately. And in Mr. Van Nusen's letter to, whether it was to the clerk or the county attorney, he's stating that I'm an infraction. So I need to clear myself up, and I can back up. I'm not just, I don't have just talk, I have documentation on everything I'm speaking. And it's all legal. So, therefore, I thank you, gentlemen, and everybody for your time, and respect whatever the board decision or council's decision is moving forward. Thank you.
Any questions for Doug?
I got, why did you state at the beginning of this whole thing that there's three positions open?
So there's another position. So
the other one's an elected position, isn't it? Is
that right. Correct? On okay. January 29th okay. of 2024, Will Downs, who was the former chairman of the Conservation District, resigned. And the reason why he resigned, and it's in his resignation letter, and I've made that resignation letter public information, which is recorded in the county courthouse, our county clerk's office with Heidi Stadel, that it states that Sharon Flemettis would not follow the direction and advice and best management practices of the chairman of the board, nor would she follow the direction of the board itself. And then the board would not back Mr. Downs and his decisions with regards to the situations that were ongoing, and he was left with no other choice but to resign.
Yeah, all right.
And that's a matter of record in the county courthouse.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Right.
Just clarification, you guys are, there's two positions. Not
yeah, that's why I was asking. That's why I said three. That's why I was wondering.
Do we as the city have to post those positions? Because
they
were never, well, exactly, we haven't, but aren't we supposed to?
I don't know.
We have not. And in the past, we have not. I don't know. Well, I've only been here 6 years, and I don't know what we've always done historically. But we have in the past for Mr. Walker's first appointment in 22. We didn't, I don't think we posted that. It was just provided to us from the district. I don't think we've done in the past. But it's a good question. I don't know what the public advertising process has been in the past for these.
Do you guys remember appointing any?
I remember appointing, but they were. Recommended.
They always do the city county planning board.
They made application.
Correct. We advertise for the city county planning board.
I think we advertise for some board positions. I'm not sure of all the ones we do and do not advertise. But some also, I think you guys are in control. If that's something you want to see down the road, we can do that.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Any other public comment on current agenda items? I'll let that gentleman speak since Sharon's already spoken.
I was just going to answer the question to the best of my ability.
There was no question from the council.
Yes, Ben Walker. I was asked by several people on the board to get involved after the flood happened, mainly to get through the crazy amount of applications that came in. It was went from 20 to 30 a year to over 300 in 1 year of 310 applications. So it's had nothing to do with any of the grants or anything. And there was so much workload, along with every one of them needing a site visit, at least one, and trying to photograph or video all these projects and stuff. That's one of the reasons, like I said, I got involved. But now that all this is coming, we've been nothing but trying to defend ourselves. Everything that has been discussed was already brought up, like Karen and everyone said, through NRCS. And we had a path forward and all that, and that was over a year ago. So at this time, I'd like to pull my application for being.
You would like to what?
Pull my application.
You'd like to remove your application?
Yes, please.
Okay. Is there any other public comment on current agenda? Yes, sir.
my name's Nate Jones, and I was asked to be on the board also to help serve. I had also done some service volunteer work before that time. It was never my intention to have any issues or create any issues for anybody, so I'd also, I'm going to like to pull my application too.
Okay. So. Is there any other public comment on current agenda items? We have no reports of committees, and there's no unfinished business. I'm going to call a five-minute recess in the meeting, and we'll be back in 5 minutes.
Us old guys.
Us old guys.